After all, another fella took you, but I still can't overlook you. I'm gonna do my best to hurt you. After all, said and done, you're gonna say you'll miss me. You're gonna say you'll kiss me. You're gonna say you'll love me, 'cause I'm gonna love you too.
You're listening to the best in all that Buddy Holly ever recorded during his career. Classic radio, like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager. We're not even halfway through. What do you think about that? I mean, we've got a long time to go, a lot of hours still ahead of us. We're going to take a break in about 35 minutes so that you can hear the Jackie Patru program. And we would have preempted that broadcast tonight, but she is making her debut in a couple of new affiliates, and we certainly don't want to lose out on that. It's important not only for Jackie Patru, but for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. After his contract with Decca in Nashville had lapsed in late 1956, Buddy Holly and Jerry Allison continued to develop their musical partnership, and it was during the ensuing months that the two perfected the fusion, which was later to be the backbone of all of the Crickets' activities. Jerry Allison, Buddy's guitar playing influenced my drumming more than anything. I learned to play drums with what Buddy played. We played together so much because we used to just sit around and rehearse for no reason, just to be playing. I knew how he was going to play it, and he knew how I was going to play. He and I used to play dances, not even a bass player, and he would play chord lead. He wouldn't play just single string things like was normal. That was the most different thing about the whole Buddy Holly and the Crickets thing. What Buddy played on the guitar. We had to fill up all the holes in the music. It was during these few months that Holly and Allison taped many of their practice sessions, either at the Holly's home or in Larry Holly's garage. And of course, they played many live dates as well. Soon, Holly and Allison determined to make another demo of That'll Be the Day in the hope of interesting one of the major record companies, including possibly Roulette Records in New York. Jerry Allison said this, Buddy Knox had Party Doll that was doing great, and we said, well, how come he can do it and we can't do it? We finally got involved with Buddy Knox's guitar player's sister, who lived in Lubbock. She called us and wanted us to play on some demos because she said, I'm going to send these records to Roulette. And we said, well, hey, we'll cut some and you send them to Roulette for us. In fact, Buddy Knox's hit Party Doll was made in the studio owned by Norman Petty, about 100 miles away in Clovis, New Mexico. And so it was to Clovis that on February the 25th, 1957, Holly, Allison, together with bassist Larry Wellborn and friend Nicky Sullivan, went to record a demo of That'll Be the Day. Holly had already worked out a new arrangement for the song, which now was to include background vocals in an attempt to give it a more polished sound than the earlier version made in Nashville. The normal Petty trio had already had several successful singles cut in Petty's own studio, most notably Moon Indigo with his wife Vi on vocals and Almost Paradise. We didn't build the studio for other people. We built it to record our own trio. But later, after other people discovered there was such a studio with excellent equipment in Clovis, they started coming in. Unlike later Crickets recordings, when background vocals were added later, That'll Be the Day was recorded all at the same time, remembers Larry Welber. We had worked on That'll Be the Day for a long time along with those singers, but even when we went up to Clovis, it seems to me like we spent hours on it, just recording it over and over. Buddy had worked out the arrangement ahead of time, but Norman Petty had us run through it again and again, trying to make sure it was perfect. However perfect it was, Roulette turned the record down, thinking it too similar to those of Buddy Knox and Jimmy Bowen, and it was only then that Petty stepped in and offered to help by playing the tapes to contacts he had established through his own success in New York. After another rejection from Mitch Miller at Columbia, Petty finally got a release from Bob Thiel, then running the Brunswick and Coral labels, ironically subsidiaries of Decca Records, who not a year previously had terminated Holly's contract. Success was still a far-off hope, and between the recording of this new version of That'll Be the Day and its release in the last week of May, Holly, Allison, Sullivan, and Joe B. Malden continued to rehearse, play live dates, and make more recordings with Norman Petty. The Crickets' first live date, which was before the release of That'll Be the Day, was in Carlsbad, New Mexico. Nicky Sullivan remembers it vividly. Norman got us a booking in Carlsbad at the VFW Hall on the strength of Buddy's Decca recordings. Nobody went to Carlsbad as an entertainer, so the place was packed. When we got there, the place was packed with kids until we looked upstairs, and it was all adults. We felt really ill at ease because this was our first performance publicly. But we went out and performed for a good 3 hours, and we had the place rocking. You couldn't have heard Joe B. and cause we had muted instruments, so Jerry and Buddy really carried the show. Regardless, the show must have been a success, for the group made front page headlines the next day. The headlines said this, Buddy Holly and the Crickets break up Carlsbad. Not bad. for a young country boy from Lubbock, Texas. Even if it was Carlsbad, New Mexico. Joe Malden also has fond memories of the event, too. Buddy and Jerry came by one day. They had a job in Carlsbad to play a dance, and they needed a bass player for that night, and so I accepted the job, and on the way back, Buddy asked me if I wanted to play regular with him. He said, "We've cut a record called That'll Be the Day, and it's gonna be a stone hit." In fact, although it took 13 long weeks from the day they recorded That'll Be the Day to the day it was issued, it was a further 10 weeks before the record showed in the bottom reaches of the American Top 100. It did, however, allow the group to stockpile, if unintentionally, enough material for future use. Norman Petty. Buddy was in the studio all the time. I was recording other people at the time, too, but it would have suited him fine if I'd just dropped everything and just recorded Buddy. He would have been there 24 hours a day. Buddy's brother, Larry Holly, says, "Everything Buddy did, he did with a sense of urgency. That he wasn't going to have a lot of time, he didn't slow down at all. I think it was because he was doing what he wanted to do more than anything in this world." Jerry Allison. "We just sort of hung around. We could record any time we wanted. It wasn't a thing where you go in for 3 hours and quit because we could record for 5 minutes if we wanted to, then knock off for 3 hours and then record more." The first titles to be cut in Clovis after That'll Be the Day, I'm Looking for Someone to Love, were Last Night and a demo of Maybe Baby, recorded on 12th March and a couple of weeks after Joe Malden had joined the group. Next came Words of Love, the first recording on which Holly double-tracked his voice and guitar. And as Jerry remembers, Buddy had two guitar parts worked out before we even started to record that. I don't know how he got the idea, but he planned to do it that way. According to John Goldrosen, Holly Petty, and the Crickets spent at least 6 hours on the tune, working out the overdubbing by a process of trial and error, trying to achieve the balance and sound Holly wanted. And by all accounts, the sun was rising before the session was over. Fortunately, Petty's studio had a small area in an adjacent room where the boys could rest or sleep after a particularly long recording session, and of course, this saved them the inconvenience of the long ride back to Lubbock when things were going well. Nikki, "I remember Words of Love. That was tough. I finally went to sleep on the couch about 4 a.m. I think they finished it after that. That session went from 8 a.m. till about 6 or 7 the following morning." Jerry's calendar for 1957 indicates that one session that started on June 29th did not end until the early hours of July the 1st. However, the approach seems to have worked, for it was this marathon that produced not only both sides of Holly's third solo single, Listen to Me and I'm Gonna Love You Too, but also the Crickets' second smash hit, Oh Boy, and probably Holly's most remembered release under his own name, entitled Peggy Sue. There is no doubt that Peggy Sue rates as possibly Holly's greatest recording, and the way this track was recorded is probably typical of most Clovis sessions. Originally known as Cindy Lou, after Holly's young niece, it had a slower tempo and a Latin beat, far removed from the final master. Nikki Sullivan said, "But it didn't sound right with the cha-cha beat. It had no class." Then Jerry said, "Let's put my girl's name to it," which was Peggy Sue. But that was hard to do until Buddy said to Jerry, "Why don't you put paradiddles to it," which is a drummer's beat that they use when they are taking lessons. With these changes, the group ran through the song, but Allison's drums were far too loud and were spoiling the sound balance. So for this session, Jerry was moved out into the lobby of the studio. From there, Petty ran the microphone wires through the echo chamber and achieved the in-and-out echo effect of the drums by manually raising and lowering the volume and amount of echo in time with the music to give the recording its unique and hypnotic sound. There was one other problem. Holly's now legendary guitar break in the middle required him to flick the pickup switch on his guitar, which he could not accomplish without stopping playing, which would have interrupted the flow of the song. Sullivan remembers how they did it. "I was in the same room playing rhythm guitar, the same exact part along with Buddy, and it wasn't coming out on the tape. Buddy couldn't switch from rhythm to lead fast enough without breaking rhythm. He couldn't get his hand to the switch fast enough, and it showed up on tape. So we stopped and redid it with me pushing the switch on Buddy's guitar. On the next take, we did it. It couldn't have been more than 20 minutes. Norman Petty's recollection confirms the speed with which Peggy Sue was finally recorded. "We had been working for a couple of days on various cuts, and I think the boys were going to put me on because they knew I was tired. So Buddy said, 'Let's record some more. I don't want to go to bed.' So I said, 'Okay.' So at about 5:30 that morning, Buddy said, 'Let's write a song about Jerry's girlfriend.' It was about 5:30 that morning, and I think about 9:30 we had the completed master. So it really was a quick thing. And as Jerry Allison says, 'We were all pretty flipped out about that one. We said, man, that's weird. That's different. It sounds good.' The flip side of Peggy Sue was every day, and as Norman Petty recalls, was more time-consuming than usual. Every day took us a long time because I played Celeste on it. I would have to go in and set the level, walk back into the studio and hit the recorder, so it made it a little bit time-consuming." The recording is also unusual from the point of view of Jerry Allison's performance. While Holly was demonstrating the song during the run-through, Jerry started to join in, improvising by slapping his knees, and the sound appealed to Holly. So the only drumming on the recording is Jerry Allison slapping his knees. This leisurely pace in Clovis was to change noticeably when That'll Be the Day started to climb the charts, and climb it did. And thereafter, many sessions were cut out of Clovis, either in New York or even on the road during the hectic touring schedule that the Crickets now undertook. During August of 1957, the group undertook their first touring engagements, culminating in a week-long stint at the Paramount Theater in Brooklyn. The tour included a week at the Apollo Theater, which by 1957 presented almost exclusively black artists. For ironically, the promoters of the tour had confused the Crickets with another black vocal group of the same name. After appearances on the Alan Freed TV show and the Paramount dates, along with other artists such as Larry Williams, Little Richard, the Dell Vikings, and the Moonglows, all black artists, the group embarked on a grueling 80-day tour, culminating on December the 1st in an appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. After a short break and a visit back to Lubbock, the Crickets were back in New York, minus Nicky Sullivan, who left to pursue his own career, for the Alan Freed Christmas holiday shows at the Paramount Theater. New York, sharing billing with Fats Domino, the Everly Brothers, Danny and the Juniors, and Paul Anka. This heavy schedule was to continue until May of the next year, 1958, with breaks only for a few days' rest or in instances when white artists were forbidden to appear on the same shows as black ones. Recalls Nicky Sullivan, "We hit the Mason-Dixon line, and it was a whole new ballgame. There were 116 of us on tour, both black and white, and the biggest problem we had was going into New Orleans out of Atlanta. At the county line, we were met by two patrol cars, and they forced the buses off the road, and they informed us that in New Orleans, there is no way that blacks and whites are going to appear on the same programming. So they put all the blacks on one bus, that's 96 people, and they put all the whites on the other bus, that's 20 people, and from there, we were escorted into town. The blacks were taken to one hotel, the whites were taken to another. And then we were informed we could not appear on the same show." It was during this enforced break on the road that the Crickets and Petty took advantage of the situation and met up in Oklahoma City, where their touring schedules coincided, to record several titles to complete an album required to capitalize on the success. That'll Be the Day
was having. Norman Petty. At the time, my trio were playing Oklahoma City, and Buddy had 2 days off, so he stopped by, and we recorded major soundtracks in one corner of the Officers Club one night, and Buddy continued on the road, and I took the tape back and added the background voices and echo in New Mexico. Nicky Sullivan remembers the event clearly. We did 4 sides there. Maybe Baby was the biggest thing to come out of that session. It was the only track I played lead guitar with Buddy duplicate along with him. Most of the remaining tracks were recorded in Clovis between May and July of 1957, mainly to complete either of the only 2 albums ever released during Holly's own lifetime, The Chirping Crickets and Buddy Holly. It was to complete the latter that a rather hurried morning session in New York was set up immediately before departing for tours of Hawaii, Australia, and later Great Britain. The session took place on the morning of January the 26th, 1958. The group were to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show in the afternoon, and the song scheduled for cutting was Rave On. It had previously been recorded unsuccessfully by one of its original composers, Sonny West, but as Norman Petty says, it was a real hillbilly number brought to me by Sonny West and Bill Tideman. I was playing the tape in the control room, and Buddy came in and said, I rather like that melody, but it's a real hillbilly thing. So I said, would you like to do it if we change the lyrics? So Buddy said, sure. As this was not a Clovis session, and a rather hurried one at that, the opportunity for recording the background voices later was lost, and the recording was all done together in only a couple of takes. Despite the song's inauspicious origins and the unfamiliar studio surroundings, Holly created that cold winter morning one of his most celebrated and successful recordings. As a young man, ladies and gentlemen, I lived in Midwest City, Oklahoma. My father was an Air Force officer stationed at Tinker Air Force Base. I remember that recording session, ladies and gentlemen. It was the 27th and 28th of September, 1957, at the Officers Club on Tinker Air Force Base near Oklahoma City. I was in the audience. Now you're going to hear some of the same exact music that I heard and saw performed by Buddy Holly and the Crickets. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy. We got a long time to go.
Hey, young man, go. I got a gal in Idaho. Rock and roll on the flat top, catching another dungaree job. I'm headed for the gym to the sock hop ball. Boys are really jumping, the cats are going wild. Get the critics in my ears, make the crowd I'm ready. Ready, 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 ready. Come with me, bye. Rock and roll, baby, she's the apple of my eye.
Oh boy.
All of my love, all of my kisses, you don't know what you've been a missing, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you are a mess for me. All of my life, I've been waiting, tonight there'll be no hesitation, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you are a mess for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling, and you can hear my heart calling. A little bit of love in the grill will bring the right. I'm gonna keep my baby in my heart. All of my love,
been to meet you, no boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the world could be that easy. Oh, what a day for me.
Dum dum dum, oh boy. Dum dum dum, oh boy.
My love, all my kissing, you don't know what you've been to missing, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you are what a man for me. All my life I've been waiting, tonight there'll be no hesitation, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world can see that you are what a man for me. Dark fear and the shadows are falling. You can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes you everything right. I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All my love, all of my kisses. You don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy,
the whole world will see that you are the one for me.
February 3rd, 1959, Buddy Holly died in a plane crash along with the Big Bopper and Richie Valens. This is a memorial broadcast, and we'll go until we've played every recording that Buddy Holly ever did in his entire short life. I was in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, with a young girl named Beverly Beard, who I was deeply in love with when this record was recorded.
Maybe, baby, I'll have you. Maybe, baby, you'll be true. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me. It's funny, honey, you don't care. You never listen to my prayer. Maybe, baby, you will love me someday. Well, you are the one that makes me glad, and you are the one that makes me sad. When someday you want me, well, I'll be there waiting to see you. Maybe, baby, I'll have you. Maybe, baby, you'll be true. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me. Well, you are the one that makes me glad, and you are the one that makes me sad. When someday you want me, well, I'll be there waiting and I'll see you.
Maybe, baby, I'll have you. Maybe, baby, you'll be true. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me.
Oh, what a rush that is, folks. I was only 13 years old at the time. Wow. Buddy Holly had a style and a sound all of his own that's never been duplicated by anyone before or since. Touch that dial. Classic radio like you've always wished it could be. 101.1 Eager. Coming up, dinner time for some of you, but bring it in. Listen to this broadcast and take your time.
Stay tuned at the top of the hour for the Jackie Petru program, immediately followed by a continuation of this memorial broadcast honoring the work of Ritchie Valens, the Big Bopper, and of course, the great Buddy Holly. We're going to play every record that Buddy Holly ever made in his entire career. Don't miss a single second of it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's getting close to that time. This has been a memorable afternoon. You got to hear little Allison's voice debut on the radio. And she was in here earlier dancing with her poppy. We are honoring the work and achievement of Ritchie Valens, the Big Bopper, and the great Buddy Holly, who died all together in a plane crash on February the 3rd, 1959, after leaving a small town, Clear Lake, in Iowa, on the way to South Dakota, where they were going to do another date. South Dakota or North Dakota, I forgot which. Right now, we've got to do this. Coming up is the Jackie Petru program, which immediately following, we will continue this memorial broadcast of the Hour of the Time on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Make sure that you don't miss Jackie Petru, and make double sure that you're back in front of your radio when it's time for us to resume. This is the Voice of Freedom. Thank you. listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, for the Jackie Petru program.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make her complexion like peaches and cream. Give her two lips like roses in clover. And tell me that my lonesome night's all over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn all your magic beams. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Okay.